This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dean Borg, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. And during the next hour, we're going to be bargaining, or at least discussing, legislation proposing changing Iowa's collective bargaining law relating to employees of the state of Iowa, counties throughout the state, municipal governments, and school districts. We've assembled leaders on both sides of the issue, as well as an academic research perspective. And now I'm at the Iowa Public Radio's Iowa City studio, and IPR's Statehouse correspondent Joyce Russell is at the Capitol in our broadcast facilities at the Statehouse Library. Hello, Joyce.
Hello, Dean.
And with Joyce at the Statehouse are the men and women who will be illuminating this volatile and very emotional issue for us, and I think you're going to get some of that volatility and emotion during the next hour. We're going to be talking with Jason Schultz, who's a Republican senator from Schleswig. He chairs the Senate's Labor and Business Relations Committee, and he'll be managing the collective bargaining legislation during the Senate debate. Hello, Senator Schultz.
Hello. It's great to be here. Thanks
nice
for
to have
me.
You with us. And Democratic Senator from Des Moines, Nate Bolton. He's the top-ranking Democrat on the Senate's Labor and Business Relations Committee. We just heard a Republican, Senator Schultz, now Nate Bolton. Hello, Senator Bolton.
Thank you for the invitation. Happy to be here.
And then the president of the Iowa State Education Association, Tammy Worrell. She's a teacher on leave from the Cedar Rapids Public Schools to serve as the union's president. Hello, Ms. Worrell.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
And Danny Holman is president of AFSCME. That's the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union. President of AFSCME, Danny Holman. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Dean. How are you today?
Nice to have you with us. And Gretchen Tegler, who is the former director of the state's Department of Management and Budget, and she's now president of the Iowa Taxpayers Association. She's on the telephone. Hello, Gretchen.
Hi, Dean. Thanks for the opportunity to be on, and I'm with the Central Iowa Taxpayers Association.
The Central Iowa Taxpayers, not the Iowa Taxpayers.
Right.
Okay. I dropped a central in there, and I apologize, Gretchen.
Okay.
Okay. And then later in the program, we'll be talking with Katie Swalwell. She's at our WOI studios in Ames. She's an Iowa State University Assistant Professor of Education who's been researching the effects of Wisconsin's recent action in that state's collective bargaining laws regarding public employees. Hello, Ms. Swalwell.
Hello. How are you?
Next half hour, Dean.
Yes. Okay. We'll check in with her, and that's when I intended, but I thought maybe she was at the studio right now. Let's go to an overview, first of all, as to where we are right now. That is, this collective bargaining law was enacted first in 1974. Gretchen Tegler, you have been in state government for some time. You have been in state government managing the state's Department of Budget and Management. And now you're president of the Central Iowa Taxpayers Association. Can you give us, just because of your perspective from government, and then I'll ask also Senator Schultz and Senator Bolton to give their perspectives on how we got to where we are right now. First of all, in 1974, the law was enacted. What after that?
Well, thanks, Dean. I did have the opportunity in the last couple of years to ask former Governor Ray about his thoughts when he signed that legislation back in 1974. And he said that he felt it was very important to not have public employees on strike. And that was the reason that he gave for signing the law, that in return for giving up the right to strike, collective bargaining was put in place. So since 1974, I know a lot has changed, and at the time there were a variety of factors that maybe were arguing for some of those provisions. Over the years, however, what's happened, I would just characterize the pendulum has swung, and every year as language is added to collective bargaining contracts that may have something to do with how workers are managed, those provisions stay in there. They are never taken out through an arbitration process unless dollars are given up in return for them. So over time, we've had an accumulation of provisions that make it very difficult for public sector managers to manage. Also, arbitrators have made it clear that taxes can always be raised.
We'll get into all of that, and I want to then go to Nate Bolton, who is the Democratic senator from Des Moines, top-ranking Democrat on the Senate's Labor and Business Committee. You've heard just that overview by Gretchen Tegeler now. Do you agree with that, particularly in that things have changed during the intervening years between 74 and now that make changes imperative?
Well, I would agree that it has been a statute that's been in place for 40 years and has served our state well for 40 years. And I think if we're going to make changes to the statute, I think we have to look at how it originally was created through a process of reason and compromise. You had a Republican governor reaching out to Democratic legislators, reaching out to labor groups across the state to make sure we were having a good conversation about a system that would work for all parties and be a fair process for all parties. And if we're going to try to find ways to update or modernize that process, you have to start by bringing all parties back together to make sure it's a process and a system that works for Iowans. So I would say if we're going to talk about modernizing or updating, we have to bring the parties together to do that.
We've heard both the pro and the con there, and I'm going to go to Joyce Russell now, our State House correspondent, because she has some years in the Iowa legislature. And Joyce, what's the history in the Iowa legislature? Have there been attempts to modify Chapter 20? That's the collective bargaining section of the Iowa Code. In other words, is this a pent-up desire for change or what?
Well, to go back a few years, there were some changes in the collective bargaining law during the Culver administration that were passed by a Democratic legislature. However, Governor Culver vetoed those. More recently, in 2011, the Republican-controlled House passed some provisions that were sharply opposed by Democrats, passed the Iowa House on a partisan vote after a long debate. Was not taken up by the Democratic Senate. But to answer your question, is there pent-up demand? I believe there is. I mean, this was strongly favored by Republicans all of these years. And now that Republicans have the trifecta, they're free to do that.
Well, we got a preview. The legislation just being introduced, wasn't it, Joyce, within the past week or maybe 10 days?
It was introduced last week.
Yes.
On Tuesday.
But we had a hint in the condition of the state address where Governor Tory Branstad called Iowa's collective bargaining system outdated.
Size of government is smaller, the benefits for public employees at the state and local level have increased. Unfortunately, the cost of these benefits have grown dramatically. Because of our antiquated collective bargaining system that has led to over 500 health care plans, many of which are inefficient and way too costly for public employees and Iowa taxpayers.
So, Joyce, it isn't really a surprise. We knew this was coming.
We did, and as Tuesday approached, actually the week before, there it was clear that a bill was coming. The week before, the Democrats thought that it was going to be introduced on Friday morning when people weren't here and that it was going to be taken up and passed within a week. Well, that didn't happen. But when it was introduced on Tuesday, it wasn't a surprise that this bill was coming. But the breadth of the bill was a surprise. As recently as the week before, the House Speaker had referred to the upcoming legislation as, she used the word, tilt. Many public workers believed that these were going to be minor changes, and it's definitely not minor.
Well, and I've also heard the word tweaking. We may be tweaking. Jason Schultz, Senator from Schleswig, you're chairing the Senate's Labor and Business Committee, and you'll be managing that bill out on the Senate floor. This is more than tweaking. Are you asking for more than you expect to get?
No, I don't believe so at all. This actually has gone back for me personally, going back about 8 years. This is my ninth year. But as I would go around my very first year in the legislature talking to superintendents and supervisors, and this Chapter 20 was a topic that came up frequently. And it was a sentiment that the system isn't working anymore, and that they are bound to prior collective bargaining agreements that kind of trap them from doing things to be efficient and to innovate, to try to find new ways to do business.
Well, I'll just go to take an email here, Senator Schultz, that has just come in and that speaks to a question that many people have on their mind and relating just to what we're talking about right now. Larry from Elkader says, this issue seemed to come up unexpectedly. What constituents, there's the key here, if any, have been demanding it? Or is it an outside push from ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council?
Well, I can report here in front of people watching me right here at the table and to the public radio across Iowa, I've never talked to ALEC. I've never been to one of their meetings. I've never seen any of their model legislation. So that's a non-starter. But specific constituents, it would be the office holders. It would be the people that we charge with managing the tax dollars we send them, from superintendents to city councils, county supervisors, all up to the state, AEAs and hospitals included. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of decision makers that are telling me we need to make some changes so that we can do business in the new century.
Well, Senator, there was some criticism last week during the process of the subcommittees and the committees that when it was time for anyone to step forward and argue for this bill,
mm-hmm.
There was a taxpayers group, the Americans for Prosperity's group, but all of these managers, supervisors, and so forth, we certainly didn't hear from them. So how do you account for that?
They're scared to come forward. That quite literally, I actually literally just 20 minutes ago, 30 minutes ago, spoke to another group who told me privately that they're in favor of this. This is going to help, but their members won't come forward and say anything.
Are you willing to say what group that is?
I guess I don't even want to because in the Capitol it's easy enough to pin down. But we also have, during subcommittee, we have members being intimidated behind. We've got people saying we're going to key their car. We have intimidation tactics going on here. And I'm afraid that this is a case where the legislators are coming forward to do something that requires a little courage because the people back home are simply intimidated to come forward.
Senator Bolton?
Well, I have a hard time believing that all of these elected officials, county supervisors, city council members, have a hard time of standing up for themselves. These are people that are accountable to voters that are apparently unable to voice those concerns in a legislative process. So I think that may be an overstatement. I know I've talked to county supervisors. I know I have talked to school board members and city council members who have told me they don't want this. They want a positive working relationship with their employees. And from what I've heard from Senator Schultz is I think a minimization of what this bill does. It does not just eliminate the history of bargaining. It affirmatively creates new illegal topics for the bargaining process that school board members, county supervisors, city council members cannot discuss with employee representatives about important topics on wages, hours, working conditions, health insurance benefits. This is a major change, and it does fix the outcome, and it makes it a one-sided process.
Gretchen Tegler, I'm going to ask you to weigh in here, again, president of the Central Iowa Taxpayers Association, because I think this question that we just had from Elkader, apparently you may have had some input there, too, from your members.
Well, I just have to say that, excuse me, I think that the environment is very different today than it once was. I am planning to speak briefly at the public hearing, but my husband was not completely sure that it would be safe and
safe. You mean your own personal safety?
Yeah, just safe or just a good place to be, a good environment to be. And I mean that's just a family member expressing a little bit of that concern.
but I hadn't even thought of it. But there certainly is some degree of intimidation. And way back in the 90s when we had issues with the unions, that was not present. There was always courtesy and respect shown no matter what the case was. And so I just think nationally and everywhere that speaking on a side that doesn't have such organization behind it as the public sector unions do can be intimidating. So I think there's a little bit to that, and there's definitely anyone who has ever had to manage in the public sector knows exactly how difficult it is, and knows that there are so many great employees that just could be excellent and even better if they were in a better working environment where there's a little bit more to it than just time and place, where our modern management tools are available and performance management can be in place. Well,
As we're talking about intimidation here, I think it's time that we bring in Tammy Worrell, who is president of the Iowa State Education Association, and she serves as the union's president, teacher on leave from Cedar Rapids. And then I'm going to let Joyce follow up with Danny Holman because she's right there with him. Tammy, we've been accused of intimidation, and you had an issue here late last week with email being sent out of the Des Moines Public Schools that called other legislators some very uncomplimentary names, to say the least. Now, that speaks to intimidation. So as an ISEA president and leader, how are you instructing your members to interact with legislators on this? Intimidate by just sheer force, or do you have good arguments?
Well, let me just say that that was not our union that put that letter out. It was unfortunate that that was distributed. It was unfortunate that it was ever written, but that was not the Iowa State Education Association's issue, and that was clarified on KCRG for sure. You know, what I do want to say is people are scared. And they are frightened, and they have no idea what they're going to make next year. They have no idea if their children are going to be covered. I had someone call me late in the night last week whose child is at the University of Iowa Hospitals, and they do not know what plan their family will have starting July 1st. So people are scared, and they're worried, and they feel like they have not had a voice. I will say that our members have sat down and worked with school board, worked with superintendents to try to make a great learning environment for their children, and that has worked well. We have many superintendents who are stepping out and saying this is not what they asked for. They have asked for tweaks in many places. This is not a tweak.
Well, let me follow up just quickly before Joyce questions Danny Holman, but what would you said tweaks? You're willing to accept tweaks. What do you think are you willing to accept in the way of tweaks?
Well, there were. How about the fact that right now, as it is written, a public employee can be let go for any reason at all? So someone who has taught 10 years, but we need to save some money, or we need to hire a football coach and give him a big signing bonus, we maybe don't need the 10-year fourth grade teacher anymore. There is that certainly is not something that is just a tweak. We had heard that there was need for arbitration tweak to look at the ability to pay. Certainly, that's a tweak. And in fact, one legislator thought we were trying to add the ability to pay into arbitration, when actually that's what's in arbitration, as I'm sure Gretchen will talk about. That's a tweak. And let's look at arbitration for those 10. Contracts that actually went to arbitration over the last year or so.
Mr. Holman, you are here today taking a break from contract negotiations, and explain to us what the fact that this bill is out there, how is that affecting the negotiations that were already underway?
Well, since one of my attorneys is here, I can't talk about what happens in bargaining, because under the current law as it exists, we can't talk about it. But I will address some things. I guess intimidation is 350 concerned citizens showing up at a forum to talk with their legislator when they won't talk to them, when they say, no, you can still bargain over health insurance. That's not true. That's a blatant lie. We can't. They come and say, we're going to tweak a few things. As Senator Bolton said and Tammy said, this isn't a tweak. They have taken away our ability to bargain. And then some legislators have said, and I'm really glad to meet you, Jason Schultz, this is the first time I've ever met you, are saying that they have met with AFSCME Union to discuss this bill. We've never had a meeting with anybody about this bill. I think the difference between today and 1974 is what Senator Bolton alluded to. There were 12 days of debate. We won't have 12 hours of debate. We didn't get to see this bill until they dropped it last Tuesday, and they're going to pass it this week.
Danny, what would you hope to accomplish? Danny, what would you hope to accomplish if you had had a chance to talk with Senator Schultz or others who were crafting the legislation? What, and I asked the same question I asked of Tammy, what would you be willing to accept and you think may be necessary in tweaking or adjusting and updating Iowa's current law?
Well, I'd like to sit down with fair-minded people who want to have a fair conversation about what they see as a problem. Show me what the problem is, Dean. Our union, over the last 40 years that we have been in existence, has always been willing to sit down and have conversations with legislators, be it Governor Branstad or Governor Culver, Governor Vilsack. The second Governor Vilsack or Branstad term, we haven't had a conversation with him.
Just Senator a quick Schultz, question. Go ahead, Jess.
I was just going to give, I know we're about out of time, but I wanted to give Senator Schultz a chance to respond to that. I heard that in the committee that you had sat down and talked with certain unions, and here we have Mr. Homan saying that you didn't talk to him. So do you want to respond to that?
I believe there were leadership meetings, that there were people, the issues coming up during the session, and that the feedback that I've received from that was that there was going to be no changes accepted or not resisted.
And Ms. Morrow and Mr. Homan are shaking. Ms. Warrow, Mr. Homan are shaking their heads.
We have never been contacted.
She says she's never.
We did meet with leadership, and we asked them if there was going to be a bill. We asked them if we would be able to have input, and we were told no. That was the meeting.
We're going to be breaking here in the discussion for some news and updating weather information. Then we'll be back to continue this river-to-river discussion on collective bargaining. Dean Borg here, continuing river to river across Iowa, discussing major changes in the state's laws regarding collective bargaining with public employees. And before we continue that discussion, just a reminder that coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, at the top of the hour now, special coverage from NPR News. Iowa Public Radio will be airing the live broadcast of a joint news conference from President Donald Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. They'll be summarizing their discussions and taking questions, so live coverage of the President's press conference at 1 o'clock today, right after we finish our discussion on collective bargaining. And in our Des Moines studio at the Law Library at the Capitol, we have Jason Schultz, a Republican senator from Schleswig, Nate Bolton, Democratic senator from Des Moines, Tammy Worrell, she's president of the Iowa State Education Association, Danny Homan, who's president of AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union. Gretchen Tegler's on the phone. She's the president of Central Iowa Taxpayers Association. And in our AIM studio, we've got a cast of thousands here, Katie Swalwell. And she's an Iowa State University assistant professor of education who's been researching the effects of Wisconsin's recent actions in that state's collective bargaining laws regarding public employees. Hello, Professor Swalwell.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
What have you found in researching?
Sure. Just a couple things, too, before in responding. I was listening to the conversation earlier, and I appreciated Senator Schultz saying that in response to the email that he himself hasn't been inspired by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. But when I look at these issues, I'm looking from more of a macro perspective. And really what's happening in Iowa fits a much larger pattern regionally of very similar legislation. The case that I'm most familiar with is in Wisconsin, which is very, very similar legislation as to what's being proposed in Iowa.
Define just a little bit more. You said a larger pattern in Iowa. I didn't quite catch the implication there.
Sure. So this, I guess, attack on collective bargaining and these proposed changes to collective bargaining and changes to public sector unions started maybe six, seven years ago, really a series of Republican governors in the Midwest, in Indiana and Ohio, eventually in Wisconsin, proposing really similar legislation or changes to executive orders that had previously encouraged collective bargaining. So there's a larger pattern at play. And when we look at the history, I think it was 1974 that Governor Ray signed Chapter 20, that the year previous to that, 1973, was when ALEC was formed. And currently, over 1,000 bills across the country are based on templates that ALEC is creating. And one of the templates that they have created is legislation like this to restrict collective bargaining. So
just to define, ALEC is an acronym for the American Legislative Exchange Council.
Right. And it's an organization that a lot of corporations pay to belong to. The purpose is to write legislation that will promote free market kinds of principles and solutions and to really focus on privatizing public goods and services. So I believe Mr. Schultz said he himself was not inspired by that, but I just wanted to point out that this is a broader context regionally that's happening and nationally that's happening, that it isn't just Iowa.
Specifically in Wisconsin, are there quantifiable effects?
Yes. You know, my study has really looked at what's happened to teachers' professional lives and what's going on with their ability to teach and reach students post Act 10. So more of a symbolic impact, and I'm happy to talk more about that. In terms of teacher turnover, we know that 75% of districts in Wisconsin are losing their teachers after Act 10 because a competitive or competing district has offered a better salary or benefits. And this teacher turnover actually is hitting rural districts and districts with declining enrollment much harder than suburban districts. Lower income districts are hit much harder than wealthier districts. And even for large urban districts, it's tricky because they're so large, they have so many teachers that they can't compete to offer staying bonuses to everyone who might be recruited away.
Professor Swalwell, pause right there. Put yourself on the hold button, and I'm going to ask Republican Senator from Schleswig, the chair manager of the collective bargaining legislation in the Senate debate. Jason Schultz, you heard what she said about the effects in Wisconsin. How do you answer that, and are you afraid? You're from a rural area, Schleswig.
I am, and I sat in a room with nearly every superintendent in the Senate district here just 2 weeks ago, when school administrators of Iowa came up, and all of them expressed support for this. They're not worried about this urban versus rural. They're not. They're looking for the opportunity to manage their schools. However, I think it should be always pointed out that any effect that happened in Wisconsin has something to do with the billion-dollar cut in funding that happened immediately following Act 10. Now, Act 10, and we're actually not filing or we're not running a bill now that mirrors Wisconsin, but Act 10 set in place a framework similar to this because similar problems have similar solutions. So to see that there are similarities between different states' approaches. Well, that's hard. It's hard not to have that happen. But when you take $1 billion out of their budget for, I believe it was just education, you're going to have ramifications like that. And part of Act 10 was in order to allow the decision maker in each school to make local decisions that best mitigated the effect at their local school.
And I'm going to ask also Gretchen Tegeler to weigh in on this because you're one of the proponents of adjusting Chapter 20. You've just heard what happened in Wisconsin. You've heard the response of Senator Schultz. But what would you say, Gretchen Tegeler? Does this frighten you about the effect on the educational system?
No, it doesn't. Iowa's education funding provides the same per pupil funding across the state. districts under the proposed changes would then be able to decide how they wanted to go forward and implement some of these changes. There's also, I'm not sure if those on the call have seen, there's the beginning of some research on student achievement, and there's an economist from Stanford University, economic researcher Barbara Biasi, who is doing a study awaiting peer review that takes a look at the impact on student achievement and kind of gets into what happened in Wisconsin in some detail about what some of the shifting was all about. And districts that did make some changes to recruit and retain high value-added teachers, the ones who most improve student learning, were attracting teachers, and some of the districts that continued to just administer pay raises across the board without regard to, market demand for STEM teachers or educational accomplishment.
Okay, Gretchen, I'm going to interrupt there.
So I think it's, I'm not afraid of it.
Okay, I want to go back to Professor Swalwell and ask specifically then, what's the effect on the flexibility of state and local government to manage their public employees, and is there a measurable effect? Two questions here. Measurable effect on academic performance in Wisconsin schools.
Yeah, I've actually seen that study that Gretchen mentioned, and there are a couple of other studies coming out too, very, very preliminary data about student achievement data. And what seems to be the trend is that in districts, again, wealthier districts that can pay bonuses to recruit teachers that they consider to be high performing, have some minimal impact on math achievement scores is what's been looked at thus far. What's happening is the rural districts and especially the border districts, either districts on the Minnesota border, for instance, where teachers don't have to move in order to switch jobs, or districts such as Perry or Grimes, where teachers could work in Des Moines and not have to move, those border districts are actually really struggling to fill positions to be able to recruit teachers. So the attrition of teachers considered to be highly performing is going to districts that are wealthier, where the achievement rates tend to be higher anyway for all sorts of reasons that are related to another topic for another day. So this minimal achievement is happening at the expense of districts that can't afford to recruit and retain teachers. And I think the budget deficit, it was actually a $750 million cut to public education. You know, we haven't had a cut necessarily here in Iowa, but we definitely didn't have the increase that was requested. So thinking about the financial position that school districts are in, rural districts, districts with declining enrollment are really going to find it very difficult to compete with districts that have the ability to pass bond referendums, that are wealthier districts to begin with. That this achievement effect seems to only work for the districts that are able to recruit these student or these teachers, and the effect seems fairly small, and the researchers have been cautioning against making judgments without being able to look a little bit longer term.
Thank you, Professor Swalwell. Thank you very much. That gives us a good overview. Thank you for that research and for enunciating it very clearly. Tammy Warrow, that should ring a bell in your corner.
It certainly does. I'm actually kind of confused now why Gretchen thinks that this would be helpful. Iowa has the highest graduation rate in the nation. We are doing wonderful things with actually less money in many of our districts. Our rural districts have seen declining enrollment, and they are receiving less dollars. We have transportation costs that are way out of line, and our children are on buses for hours because of our rural communities needing to consolidate. Our ACT scores are between 1 and 2 in the nation as well. We are doing great things in Iowa, and I am confused how what was explained as a way to save taxpayers' money. I didn't hear any money savings in that. In fact, all I've heard today were some organizations that actually have my tax dollars pay their dues. Some of them thought this was a good idea. I want to be clear, a difference between Wisconsin and Iowa in their bill and ours is that Iowa unions are a choice for our members. That was not a choice in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Our members have chosen to be members of our unions, and they don't have to be if they don't want to be.
Tammy?
And every non-member receives the same wages and the same benefits as a member does.
Tammy, I'm bringing on the line here for all of our guest speakers, not just you, but I want to hear from Aaron in Independence. He's talking about local control. Thank you very much, Aaron, for waiting so long. I'm going to bring you on the air and ask your question.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a young teacher, and I was a teacher in Waterloo. I'm now a stay-at-home dad, and my wife is a music teacher. And for us, I mean, this obviously affects us because we have an income we can, you know, we count on. And we met with our local representatives, and they brought up this issue of, you know, local control. And what I don't understand, though, is how this is actually going to benefit us. Because this idea of local control is that, well, you know, we could get more money as teachers, but, you know, if it's just up to each district, you're right. Some districts have the resources and they can pay more. But what if, you know, for our family, they decide, well, music isn't that important to us, so we're not going to pay you as much. And that really has an effect on our family. And I don't see, you know, in a business it works. Sure, we want businesses that do well to do better.
What
education,
Aaron? What scares you? I'm failing to get the point that you're making. What scares you the most about this?
Well, if we're just leaving it up to individual districts, I mean, it's not to say that we can't have a conversation about how could, you know, teachers get paid more. Because as a young teacher, sure, I put in, you know, a lot of extra time, and in the end, I got paid less just because of my time. But that conversation shouldn't just, you know, be held at, you know, up to each individual school. I mean, that's the conversation we could have as a
whole
state.
I think
and with our union.
I think we've got, and we're going back to our panel. Thank you, Aaron from Independence, for expressing your views to us. Joyce?
Ms. Waro, currently rural districts are already at a disadvantage compared to urban districts. That's already a problem and has been for a long time. So how is this going to exacerbate that?
Well, I think what our caller was saying was in a rural district right now, a teacher can go there and move their family there and trust that they know what they're going to make when they purchase a home. They know what type of insurance they have if their husband's a farmer or owns their own small business like my husband does. They are secure in some pieces of that. In a rural community, if they decide that music is not as valuable, what could happen is that music teacher could get a deduction, say lose $10,000 in their salary, while other teachers continue to make more. There is nothing that would keep a teacher to feel secure where they're living. So they would continue to follow the money, follow where a bonus might be, go somewhere else. And that would be a dramatic impact.
Tell me,
Senator Schultz, did you have a response for that?
Well, the item that was left in mandatory negotiating would have been wages, which
base
has
wage.
Arbitration there.
Yeah, your base wage. What's the definition of that, Senator?
It's the base wage. It's right. the bottom line.
33.5.
This is what we're going to pay. So to say that you could lose $10,000 is inaccurate.
No, Senator, I would argue it is not inaccurate.
Well, we disagree on that. However, I do believe it is up to the local school beyond base wage who they reward. They're good teachers that they can reward. This is an opportunity for schools to run more efficiently and to reward good teachers. And if somebody's not performing up to standard, they can look for a place where maybe their skills are more better suited.
Senator Bolton?
A couple points here. First of all, talking about base wages, base wages probably wouldn't change that much, but most teachers aren't making just the base wage. Their incomes will be affected by a unilateral policy shift that will be instated by their school districts, and they won't have a voice at the table. They won't have a voice in determining their health insurance anymore. Those are big deals, and it's going to be a real problem to recruit quality teachers to rural school districts when we add uncertainty to the profession. And I heard a lot of comments about intimidation, and what we're really inviting, where people are going to be really intimidated, is at their workplace. People are going to be fearful of reprisals in this system because we're cutting out cause for termination. We're limiting the voice at the bargaining table. So when we talk about fears and we talk about intimidation, the real fear I'm worried about is the fear and apprehension that a school teacher or a public sector employee who has chosen to live out the calling of public service, now constantly looking over their shoulder, knowing they could be fired without reason, and they may not have the benefits that they have worked to earn over their livelihood.
Joyce, that's something I can speak to in terms of, at least in Wisconsin, what we are noticing in terms of the impact of Act 10 has been absolutely a greater workload for teachers. Most of the teachers in our study reported having at least at the high school and middle school level, an additional 30 students on their workload. So you have increased class sizes, you have more grading, you have less time and attention to spend on individual students. I think it's worth remembering that collective bargaining agreements typically include much more than wages and benefits, but also include extracurricular duties, prep time, collaboration time, grievances, how you can file those, and as the senator said, also reasons that you can be fired. And one of the most common themes that we heard in our interviews was teachers, even teachers that were very, very confident with over 20 years of experience, you know, felt very valued by their communities, expressed a lot of fear that they wouldn't be able to teach the same way that they had before. They wouldn't be willing to push students in critical thinking. They wouldn't have either the time or the feeling of confidence that if they, you know, angered the wrong person on the school board or an administrator, that they could be removed without cause, and they wouldn't have a way to file a grievance. So
I'm going to interrupt here just for a second because I want to move on and we're running out of time. There is one of the arguments for those wanting to change Chapter 20 is that as a school board, for example, comes in negotiating with teachers, they first go to an impasse if they can't agree. Then they go to an arbitrator, and they both sides, teachers' union and the school board, submits a package of proposals to an arbitrator. The arbitrator does not have the flexibility to go back and say, would you amend this package a little bit? I think we can find agreement. That arbitrator must choose one or the other. And one of the criteria for choosing is, does the payor, does a school board in this case, have the ability to pay? Well, they can assess the taxpayers. And so he'll choose that package. He or she, the arbitrator, chooses that package because the taxpayer can always foot the bill. I'm asking you then, Senator Bolton, make the case that Iowans should be paying for an arbitrator's decision that the taxpayer has deep pockets.
Well, I think there's a little bit of a misstatement there, Dean, in that an arbitrator is only going to look at how we can raise taxes to afford whatever the union is asking for in a negotiation. In fact, I would say the opposite is happening. Arbitrators are looking at the history of the bargaining process and how the parties have come to this reasonable proposal that they are saying is on the table. And it's not an exclusive factor of can the school district go out and raise taxes. In fact, I think arbitrators have every incentive to avoid that as the standard. They're looking at the history of bargaining, they're looking at comparable employees, and making sure that the reasonable proposal that's on the table is considered. What this legislation does is actually removes a lot of the arbitrator's ability to consider what evidence that makes these proposals reasonable, and then fixes an outcome to a very limited number of possible awards, basically saying that at best, in the highest of economic times when the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, has increased dramatically, teachers, public employees are going to be limited to a 3% increase at best.
Senator Schultz?
That's what an arbitrator can do.
Senator Schultz, I'll give you a chance.
No, this bill actually, as we were putting it together, local, I keep saying local control because this is what we were working on. A school board can give any raise it wants. It can do whatever it would like. But if it goes to arbitration, there is a cap there, because if the state doesn't have the money to fill in state aid, if the property taxpayers can't go anymore, they have the ability. We put a cap in there to protect in arbitration so that the taxpayer isn't told you have to pay up. But voluntary packages are completely at their will.
So it's only at arbitration where that cap kicks in.
Yes.
Senator Bolton?
But I'll tell you what, and this is why this legislation needs more time and consideration, because there are parts of this bill and this legislation that actually restricts the application to minimal interpretations. And I think that there's a possibility out there that a school board can say, hey, this proposal is over and above what an arbitrator could possibly be awarding. You are actually asking for something that is a bad faith proposal, and we don't think we are going to consider any other evidence. I think that's dangerous for school districts.
I think you can't by law, how many school districts are going to settle above the 3% cap that they put in this bill?
I think we're hearing from Danny Holman.
I mean, the bottom line is they say that they did this because they had this outcry.
Danny, I have to interrupt, okay. Danny, because we're out of time. Thank you all so very much for insinuated at the beginning we're going to reach an impasse, and we have. This is River to River.